Welcome to Disability News and Views Radio with your host, Monica Mashenko, a mother and advocate of people with disabilities who is passionate about educating the public. Disability News and Views Radio provides a weekly forum for sharing the challenges, opportunities, and inspirational stories of people with disabilities around the globe. We welcome your participation on Disability News and Views Radio via questions, topic ideas, and comments emailed to Monica at disabilitynewsradio.com. And now, here's the host of Disability News and Views Radio and a fellow advocate of people with disabilities, Monica Mashenko.
To Disability News and Views in this wonderful month of January and the new year. I think it's exciting to be a part of a new year. Let's face it. And you know what? There's always new hopes and dreams with a new year, which I think a lot of people, that's why they have resolutions and try to decide to make changes in their life. And it's good to always do that, I think. Today we've got a really terrific guest on the radio show. Rick Ritter, just like the actor Ritter, right?
Yeah, just minus the money.
Rick is a social worker, and he's also a veteran with a disability. He's worked for more than, I think, 100 clients who've experienced physical loss and disability. Mm-hmm. And Rick's the author of a really great workbook, Coping with Physical Loss and Disability. And why do I like it personally? I think the workbook actually goes beyond providing help for people and insights for people with physical loss. But that's the reason you wrote it, isn't it, Rick, that you wanted to really help a unique audience out there that really wasn't, their needs weren't being met.
Yeah, I had encountered a lot of grief and loss materials over the years that had to do with death and dying, but nothing really specifically was written to address physical loss, physical disability kinds of issues. And I wrote the workbook with that in mind and trying to be specific enough to help people move forward, but also be general enough that it would cover the wide range of physical loss and disability issues that are out there, which are, of course, very extensive.
Well, Rick, the other thing I wanted to let people know is physical loss can be something from a simple thing to, like, having a knee injury, correct?
Sure.
Or someone that may have had to undergo a mastectomy or...
Right. It could even be, physical loss could be just the loss of energy, loss of hair from radiation, chemotherapy.
Right. So it's really applicable to so many areas of life. Rick, how did you, what made you want to put a workbook together, though? What was the catalyst behind you doing this?
Well, part of it was my own struggle with physical loss and disability. I've been a disabled vet since 1969. And I was actually disabled by some military doctors on a surgical table.
Really?
Which seemed kind of a bummer at the time, except that it kept me from going to Vietnam about a half a dozen different times. So
wow.
May have saved my life in the long run.
You never know, right? You can't even question
it. Yeah. Well, and then, because of the time, I spent almost 5 months in a military hospital with the first set of surgeries, and so I saw a lot of people struggling, and, I mean, there weren't any tools, certainly back in those days, of people talking to each other, and that didn't happen a whole lot, because we all know that males don't have those kind of problems.
Yeah, right.
And, but then as I became a therapist a number of years later, I worked in the Vet Center program that launched in 1979-1980, and of course disabled vets were a big part of the crew that I worked with as clients, and their families also struggled with a lot of the physical loss and disability issues that these guys struggled with.
Mm-hmm.
And of course at that time, Agent Orange, the herbicide poisoning, some of the other things weren't considered legitimate disabilities by the VA, but in the lives of the people that it impacted, it was very, very real.
Sure. Has that changed at all in the last few years?
Well, it's actually a legitimized disability. There's a number of, unfortunately, cancers that if a person was in Vietnam and on the ground exposed, if they can even show generally that they were exposed to those kind of substances, it's assumed that herbicide poisoning or something related to that was at the root of some of these strange cancers that people get.
Right.
But a lot of them have also had children with genetic defects of one kind or another.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's, I mean, I've sat, you know, in hospital surgical waiting areas with veterans, you know, whose child in some cases had over a dozen different kinds of disabilities when they were born.
Wow.
And some of those kids have survived and some of them haven't.
Sure. Rick, one of the things that's unique, and obviously you've been, you know, practicing, I guess you've been utilizing this workbook for over 10 years, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've lost track of how many people I've applied it to. Even before it was published, I was using some of the prototypes as I developed it over the years, and my clients at the time knew that I was working on a tool that hopefully someday would be published and help a wider group of people.
Yeah. One of my questions is, how did you come up with the idea? Because I thought this was interesting. Number one, whoever gets this book, whoever the individual is, has to want to work in this workbook. It's not, I don't think, something that you could just give to somebody and say, well, you do this, right? It's got to be something they willingly want to do.
Yeah, it's hard work. But I think it's like a lot of things in my experience as a therapist. To some extent, the harder I have to apply myself to a situation, frequently the greater the benefit or outcome is going to be for me. I think that's part of how I look at things. It's a very active sort of item that a person works on. It's not something that you can passively slide through and get it.
Right. Well, you actually
really have to dig.
Yeah, you actually make or suggest, highly suggest to people that they consult with at least three people in their lives with whom they can actually share the results of the exercise with. Why do you do that?
Well, I think that, you know, having done a lot of individual and group work over the years, the sharing of my stuff, whatever it is, with other people strengthens me. Because it takes a certain amount of courage to enter into that sharing process.
Right.
And in a sense, I also learned about that over the years by people just telling their stories and the power that their story has.
Mm-hmm.
Not only healing for them, but frequently it's healing for others as well.
Well, you know, in a sense, I almost see this, and maybe, I don't know if you've ever heard this, but, you know, we were brought up in the Catholic Church, so one of the things that you were taught to do was to share the things that you thought were challenging in your life, whatever. In a sense, isn't that what we're kind of doing in this book is, you know, bearing your soul, opening yourself up, and in a result, getting some healing through that?
Yeah, I think that's on target. I think that, in fact, I don't recall the author, there was an article
important the people that you select for sharing?
Well, I think so, because there are certainly family members or friends in some people's lives who it'd be dangerous to bare their soul to those individuals, because it would end up becoming a weapon used against a person in whatever sort of relationship existed.
Right.
So, and, you know, there's probably no way to be absolutely sure that that isn't going to happen, but I think taking one's time and not just having a knee-jerk sort of reaction and the first person's name that comes to mind sharing that stuff with them probably isn't a good way to go.
Right.
I think that, you know, taking even weeks or months to determine who those people are, if the person has the luxury of that time frame, would be a good thing.
And obviously, it's someone that you've had some past experience with sharing whatever you've gone through in your life. I mean, there's people that I know personally that I can say I've told them things, but I know the next day they share everything with everybody, which is not right, okay?
No, that's not good.
Yeah.
No. And there may be some things that I, you know, share with that person that wouldn't necessarily cause a particular problem, but there might be other things that, you know, it would create serious repercussions for an individual. For example, the whole area of disability and sexuality, you know, that's not something that a person necessarily wants spread around the community or the neighborhood.
Right. That's
true. Or your family, for that matter, sometimes.
Right. Let me ask you, does it really matter, you know, like, that you choose to have three people? I mean, is that really important criteria for the success of this book to be manifested?
Well, I think it just deepens the potential growth and healing that can come from it. Mm-hmm. Certainly, you know, if I'm not thinking of a scenario right off the top of my head, but there might be an individual who might be isolated to the point that, you know, that might not be feasible.
Right.
Then so be it, but, you know, working through the workbook would still, I think, be beneficial for that individual. And maybe the sharing part would have to come at some later point in the timeline of working through these things.
Mm-hmm. Rick, you chose to break the workbook up into six main chapters. Can you talk about those and why you selected those?
Yeah, the wanted to try to make it a systematic kind of approach.
Right.
And one of the things that a lot of times, you know, even in therapy, I think a lot of times, I don't think the past should rule today.
Right.
But understanding the past and having a clear accounting of the past lays a foundation for better work on what's going on today.
Sure.
That's in the first section, and then in the second section, focus on self-care and support. And usually, we can't do this kind of
right.
work. In isolation.
Mm-hmm.
We need support from other people. And the other thing is that frequently I think therapists leave out holding people accountable or taking good self-care of themselves. And I come up with a fairly tough assignment in terms of the self-care plan that I developed, asking people to develop 60 different coping strategies in the areas of mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual, to at least begin to create the foundation that they can work and live off of more. at least 60 coping strategies that I can plug myself into and in a moment's notice makes me a more resilient human being.
Sure.
I've done work in the past with some medical disaster teams and disaster mortuary teams, and unless those people, you know, stayed in a resilient place, as the mental health officer of a team like that, I wasn't interested in having them deploy with me because they were a liability.
Sure.
And I think in a more general sort of way, the same sort of principles apply. If I'm not taking good care of myself, I can't really bring quality stuff to the table in relationships with other people or even to a workplace.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working from a deficit kind of model.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, I think, you know, a lot of us live that deficit model.
Right, right. So then after the self-care and support, you go to dealing with the loss, which is, you know,
right,
your feelings and it and your beliefs about it. And let's face it, we all have feelings and our own ideas of what that loss means.
Right. Yeah, and I think critical to take a look at not only what the beliefs are, but, you know, how did I arrive at believing these things?
Right.
I was exposed, in fact, in the workbook I talked about a couple of people that I was exposed to as a kid that actually I think helped me have a healthier view of people with disabilities. One of the women was a leg amputee.
Uh-huh.
And she was just one of the happiest, most energized people I've ever been around in my lifetime.
Right.
And, you know, that goes a long ways to create an imprint in my thinking about what disabilities represent. That may not help me, you know, do wonderfully with a physical loss of my own when confronted with it at some point in my life.
Right.
But at least a piece of my foundation that I can lean back on at some point.
Sure. Then you understanding the disability is an important one too, because we all have unique ideas and misconceptions actually about the disability, don't we?
Yeah. And, you know, for example, you know, prior to my series of knee operations and artificial joints in my leg, I ran 10 miles every day.
Wow.
Just for fun. And so at some point, I sought out, you know, some kind of cardiovascular work that wouldn't necessarily, you know, replace that, but would at least head in that direction. And so since 1990, I kept hearing about these arm-powered bicycles.
Uh-huh.
And I actually was in Nicaragua when I finally tracked down accurate information about them. And I've toured and raced arm-powered bicycles since 1990.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's become an important part of my self-care. Now, the unfortunate part is that I live in the northern part of the United States, and so in the wintertime I have to come up with other options.
Of course, like we do here in Western New York, but we've had a great winter, as you have, right?
Yeah. And I've, you know, historically ridden all winter long as I can get out and do it safely.
Right.
But when I'm not able to do that, I need to have other things I can, you know, plug myself back into.
Rick, can we take a quick break and
sure,
we can get a message in with our sponsors, of course, because if we didn't have sponsors, we wouldn't be able to have this radio show, and I wouldn't be able to get to talk to you and learn about your, and by the way, your book, Coping with Physical Loss and Disability, is a fabulous workbook, but it's also published in Spanish, which I think is terrific.
Correct.
All right, we'll be back with more on Rick Ritter in a few minutes, so stay tuned to Disability News and Views. And hey, I've been feeling all right today, and I think, you know, Rick's the reason for me getting up today and saying, it's a great day, and look at the important work that he's been doing to make a difference in people's lives. So stay tuned with the radio show. We'll be back with more.
People Incorporated is Western New York's leading not-for-profit health and human services agency. People Incorporated provides programs and services to more than 10,000 people with special needs, their families, and seniors. Since 1971, People Incorporated has assisted individuals to achieve greater degrees of independence and productivity in their communities. Following its motto of, "Where your world opens up," the agency offers a wide range of services, including residential services, day programs, family support, training, employment, information and referral, respite services, recreation opportunities, services for children and young adults, senior services, health care, community outreach, and the Museum of Disability History. Administrative offices, residential group homes, day programs, and affordable senior housing complexes are all located throughout Western New York. For more information about People Incorporated's services, call 716-634-8132 or visit www.people-inc.org. Since 1982, Autistic Services in Williamsville, New York has served children and adults with autism and their families by providing individualized quality programs and services. Our staff is specially trained to meet the needs of individuals with autism. We offer a state-certified school program, adult programs, residential programs, case management, and other related programs and services. We also provide community outreach and trainings. For more information, call 716-631-5777 or visit us on the web at www.autisticservices.org.
Interested in becoming a sponsor of Disability News and Views, please give me a call, 1-866-369-8058. Why? It's probably one of the only radio shows on the internet that is making a difference, educating the public about disabilities, and I mean of all kinds. And our shows are podcasted, so you can listen to them forever and ever and ever, as long as there's the internet, right? And they'll be there way longer than I'll be around. So I want you to know that we're going to be taking this radio show on the road. And we're still making plans to visit a lot of different cities. If you want to be a part of taking it to the streets in 2007, please give me a call. And we've got really some really terrific sponsorship opportunities. 1-866-369-8058. We're back with Rick Ritter, and Rick, we were talking about, and he, by the way, he's a social worker, but he's also an author of a really terrific book, Coping with Physical Loss and Disability, and it's not a book, it's a workbook. It's actually a tool that is going to really help people, I think. Let's face it, there are lots of books out there, but this really helps people adjust to their new lives, whatever that is, right, Rick?
Yeah, hopefully.
And it also, I think, gives them the ability to see a lot of the strengths and abilities that they have beyond what the challenges are. Because let's face it, when you're in that place where, you know, you've just been diagnosed with something or you've lost something or whatever, the focus is always on that. And we want to get beyond that, right?
Yeah, and oftentimes... at least with some disabilities, you know, healing the person in a medical sense takes the initial time and energy of an individual and a family, and rightfully so, but we can't forget the rest of the person in the process. And so many times people heal up medically, and the emotional, psychological side of it and the spiritual just are ignored for the most part, because on the outside it appears that there is, you know, healing that has taken place.
Sure.
But it's not complete.
You're not kidding. I don't know. A part of me thinks this book is so useful in so many capacities, really, Rick. And I'm not saying this to, just because you're on the show, because I, you know, I don't need to. But I keep thinking with the huge population of people, including men, but mostly women, who are undergoing the knife to, quote, become prettier or better or whatever, don't you think a lot of the healing has to take place within them first?
Well, it should. In fact, I think that doctors, and with some procedures like bariatric surgery and those kind of things,
right,
they usually require a psychological evaluation.
Right.
Because they're not interested in doing the physical surgical procedure and then having the emotional undermine whatever progress the person might have made. And I think that, you know, that's generally true across the board.
Yeah. But, you know, let's face it, how many medical professionals always engage in that? Is that some, I mean, let's, even though the, and I know what you're talking about, the new surgery for weight loss, right? The new,
right.
Which seems to be more and more accepted by health insurance providers, okay?
Seems to be.
Yeah. But I'm talking about, like, how is it, whenever I've seen shows and news, that a person can have 20, 30 surgeries to continually fix a face or their body when in fact they're pretty whole, okay? I mean,
yeah.
How is it that they're able or allowed to?
Well, I'm not sure. I think, you know, some of those folks probably have the means to do it no matter what.
Right. So you don't, it's not so much an ethical thing then, is it?
Well, I think that, I mean, I think the ethical side of it is there, whether it's ignored or paid attention to. But I think, too, that I would presume that, you know, some insurance companies, for example, are probably a lot tighter about it than others. And
right.
I don't know that there's consistency in the field. Like some of the programs that, you know, do the makeover thing.
Right.
I mean, it's, I don't watch those on a regular basis, but when I've seen them, it seemed to me that person's issues remained after the surgical makeover.
Yeah, I would think so. They're getting...
Actually, it's more problematic at times, because if I look okay on the outside and I'm not okay on the inside, then I may have kind of set myself up to fail in an even more serious sort of way.
Exactly. I mean, I'd love to see them do follow-up stories on a lot of those people. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I wanted to get back to your book, and obviously there's a couple more chapters that you touch on transforming circumstance. What does that mean? What does that really mean?
Well, part of what has happened over time is that, you know, we've learned to cope in particular ways. And, you know, we may think about things in a particular way so as to even stay stuck, or maybe not stay stuck is the best way of saying it. If I've coped in a particular way and I try to develop a new way of coping, mm-hmm. when I'm under new levels or types of stress, I may revert back to that old way of coping unless I really thoroughly be. They step out and, you know, they're climbing mountains, they're rappelling sheer surfaces, they're doing all of these almost outlandish kinds of things that would be difficult for able-bodied people to do.
Exactly. I wouldn't have partaken them. Let's just say that. Okay.
And I think that sometimes, I'm not saying for that individual that's a bad thing, but I think sometimes those individuals get so much attention and press that other people with disabilities that on some level begin to believe that they should be able to do all those things as well, which
right.
may not be realistic. In
right.
fact, may even be dangerous to their health.
Well, you're saying that mindset, that they're trying to inflict that standard on other people that may have the same disability is wrong.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's misplaced. And I think that, you know, I think Christopher Reeves was a really courageous guy.
I loved him.
But I think also that his insistence that he was going to get up and walk may have been pretty confusing for some other people that are quadriplegic.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, I think it's important to want to change things. Obviously, you know, when you're in that situation, he was someone that was so outspoken, and actually I was going to be interviewing him. I was working with his staff, and you know, like a week after he passed away, and I kept thinking what he did was raise such a great level of public awareness.
Right.
And let's face it, if he didn't believe that he could get better, how could he continue to go on with the mission that he had set forth, which was, you know, to make a difference in whatever way he could? I mean, even if he didn't, you know, attain that dream,
right?
It was the hope that he gave you.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that creating and enlivening hope is a real critical thing. As long as it's genuine hope that, you know, we're working on and not creating false hope.
Right.
And it's a real thin line between those many times. And don't know. It's hard for me to tell from watching and listening to individuals in those situations how aware they are of, you know, the potential downside of some of what they're saying and doing.
Yeah. Well, obviously Christopher and his wife are together, and they are enjoying their own dream together. But,
yeah.
You know, I guess that there's a part of me that understands why he was like that. Not because I am. And,
yeah.
But just because it's a survival thing. Like, I want so much to be better and to get better for everybody, not just for myself, but for my family and, you know, for those that love me.
Right.
Obviously, you used his quote in your book, "So many of our dreams at first seem impossible, and then they seem improbable. And then when we summon the will, they soon become inevitable." But really, you know, I love the quote, and I believe that too. But God has His hand in this world, and but you know, it's not always our will, is it?
Right.
You also go on in your book, and I guess I wanted to just get back to the last chapter, right? It's the ongoing process of loss and recovery. Why is it an ongoing loss?
Well, I'll. There's a lot of examples that I could use. I'll use my own since I'm more familiar with it. But you know, when I had one knee surgery, that was one thing. I'm now at a point in my life where I've had 13, and I've just finished this last year in cancer treatment. And in 1990, I was diagnosed with asthma.
Wow.
And so each time something else has come along in life, I've had to adjust how I take care of myself. I've had to adjust what my limitations are.
Right.
And then that allows me to cope more effectively. Because if I assume that, okay, I'm going to do this work on myself, and you know, then I can put this book under my bed and it can collect dust monies for the rest of my life, I think that's a mistake.
Okay.
And then you throw in the aging process along with it.
Right.
You know, if a person has physical loss and then you add aging to that, they compound each other ultimately.
Sure.
And a person may not see that in their 20s or 30s, but by the time they get 40, 50, 60, 70 years old,
right,
it begins to accumulate rather quickly.
It seems to me...
And there's also some, like some of the neurological disorders like MS and MD, where you have a lot of times a slippery slope of degeneration that goes with those particular diseases.
Sure. Rick, the other thing is, by the way, I hope you're doing better with the cancer. I'm sorry to hear that, but
I'm in remission currently, so that's a good thing. I got that news just before Christmas.
I'm happy to hear that, and I'm going to say prayer for you. But what I wanted to ask you is, this book actually can be utilized then throughout different periods of your life, but I would think that you need to add some pages to it, because there's new chapters, as you say, in our life that develop and as we get older.
Yeah, I think that if a person, I think, has done a really effective and thorough job with this workbook, it's bound to have pages added to it.
Right.
Because it's something that I think requires revisiting periodically, if nothing else, just to make sure that I'm still on target.
Yeah, right.
But the aging process on top of a physical loss and disability is just another layer of stuff to deal with.
Right. Rick, the other good thing that I liked about the book is that you really provide a lot of resources.
I do.
You've got therapeutic techniques, and you've got the readings, which are many, and films, which really help. I think, let's face it, somebody can relate to a film maybe, and you give guidelines. That's a unique thing, I think.
Well, I think it's a responsible thing to do. I mean, I've had clients who, for example, had been through armed robberies at a previous point in their life, and just thought they were going for a Friday or Saturday evening movie with their friends, and ended up having to be physically carried out of a place because they just completely came unglued in a general reenactment of a similar situation where somebody's held hostage at gunpoint.
Right.
And, you know, if their friends hadn't been with them, I'm not sure what they would have done. But, and that person also had some physical disability issues, so it made it more difficult for them to be dealt with at that point.
You also have suggested reading for coping with physical loss, which is a great list, and many of the books I've actually got copies of, I'm happy to say. And then lots of organizations in here that you give information, whether it's email, websites, phone numbers, and support organizations that deal specifically with sports.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot.
Yeah, there's... there's actually a magazine that I've had in my waiting room for years called Sports and Spokes, which is put out by Paralyzed Vets of America, which has articles and it has resources in it. And unfortunately, my office is the only one I've ever seen that magazine displayed in. Even our league for disabled individuals here in
interview with two gentlemen at the Paralyzed Vets of America for Veterans Day this past year, and they were terrific. Both of them, I was, like you, honored to speak with, and really making a difference for people, and you could just feel in their tone of voice and hear it that they really care. Rick, I just wanted to provide some time again for you to talk about the book a little bit and give a little summary of outside of my talking all the time of why people should get this book. And obviously I think it's a terrific book, but
well, I think that and you had mentioned earlier that, you know, it was also in Spanish, and one of the things that's important to me is to try to make it as available to as many, many people as possible. And even to get a good translation, especially of a workbook, is a little tricky because of nuances in the languages. And I'm actually working with somebody in Germany right now to develop the same workbook in German.
That's great.
Because I think that, you know, there's just, I mean, no matter what country we go to, we have, unfortunately, increasing numbers of disabled individuals.
Right.
The kinds of physical losses, I think, have actually, over time, exploded.
Right.
Some of it due to automobiles, technology, war. There's an awful lot of sources. The environment
right.
lends itself to more and more people having some kind of loss or disability. I thought that, you know, particularly if I have insights and information and tools for people to use, I'd like to leave that as a legacy in life and go on helping people beyond my time.
Of course, isn't that, you know, I mean, I guess we all hope that we can leave something on this planet, right, that's going to be useful for others, and I think you've done a great job.
Yeah.
You know, beyond that, I wanted to add, Rick, that this book really is helpful for those that are dealing with some, you know, mental or emotional illnesses, even other health conditions like asthma, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's really, well, this is really a book that's recommended for, you know, physical loss,
right.
And you're still, you know, struggling to find your dreams. It's really for any kind of loss or if you're dealing with challenges mentally as well, right?
Right. I've tried to do that because, in fact, the Spanish version, I'm hoping to go to a Central American country this year and do a field test with the Spanish version in a clinic with people that have been tortured.
Oh, wow.
And of course, those individuals have traumatic issues on top of physical loss issues as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a... Hopefully it will, I mean, I don't want to say it's a cure-all, but I try to write it and not have it be this real narrow sort of tool.
Right. One of the comments from someone about your book said, Rick Ritter's workbook is invaluable for anyone who has been damaged in any of a very wide range of ways, including surgery, accident, violence, disease, and even aging. And let's face it, we've got a huge population of people,
right.
The baby boomers, which I am, and I'm sure you are, who are approaching, you know, aging, you know, it's right around the corner. And, you know, along with that comes other changes. And this book is really going to be useful to so many people. I just really highly recommend people get the book. And if you have a therapist or you know a psychologist, give it to them. They should have it. And then they can get it, you know, and give it to, recommend it to their patients as well, right?
Yeah, and I think that it also can help family members understand more thoroughly where their family member is coming from with a physical loss or disability issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if they just read the questions themselves and in light of what they know about their family member.
Yep.
I think that can go a long ways to help create a more supportive environment within families.
Rick, can I ask you a question? Because I'm not sure, is it physicalloss.com or is it lovinghealing.com?
It's either one.
Okay, so we've got two websites that you can actually get the book online, right?
Right. Yeah, lovinghealing, .com. There's my book as well as my publisher's other books. I just completed a book, an anthology of writings by Vietnam veterans that's also listed there.
Oh, great.
And, physicalloss.com will get you right into that website.
And people can call if they don't have access to the web for whatever reason, because then not everybody does, right?
Sure.
734-929-0881. That's the one number that I see here. So I want to make sure people know that. And again, Rick, thank you so much for putting together this book. I know it's based on your own experiences, but I think oftentimes those are the best ways that other people can relate to you. And the information in here is so solid because you've been through it, you know?
Well, it didn't come from an ivory tower, I can guarantee you.
Right. Rick, I wish you the best in your health, and we'll say a prayer for you. I mean that. I think a lot of you and what you've done and continued success in making a difference in people's lives. I mean that.
Thank you. You also.
Have a great day, Rick.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's Rick Ritter. Again, he's an author of a terrific book. Make sure you pick it up. Coping with Physical Loss and Disability. It's a workbook, guys, that's really going to make a difference. It doesn't matter if you've had whatever challenge. I mean that. This workbook's going to help you see that you still have strengths and abilities and you can move beyond them. Okay? Go online, and the website is, and I just had it in my hand, Monica, www.lovinghealing.com, or you can go to physicalloss.com or call 734-929-0881. By the way, just before we close out the show, I want to tell you about a wonderful sponsor that we have, Vanguard ADA. They are one of our new sponsors, and I'm really thankful for them because they've joined us. They've become a part of the mission and vision of Disability News and Views, making a difference. I'm sure many of you have been seeing those little yellow things on the bottom of all those new sidewalk ramps and wondered, what is that? Well, those are actually detectable warnings, little round bumps that a person that's blind or visually impaired can feel under their feet, okay? Often known as tactile cues. But more specifically, they're actually literally braille for your feet. They are stop signs for children and adults who are visually impaired and now federally mandated on all new public construction. Did you know that? Detectable warnings tell blind and visually impaired people in braille as they step on them, stop! Beware, you're about to enter a dangerous vehicular way or a grade change. Just think about that. That's really, these are safety issues, guys, that most of us take for granted, but this is an important law, and ADA Systems provides what is needed here. Many companies sell detectable warnings. Only one has nationwide installers, and only one has a 5-year replacement warranty. Vanguard ADA Systems. Vanguard Detectable Warnings, a great product and a great sponsor of Disability News and Views Radio. Vanguard, online.com, all one word. It's all there. Or feel free to give them a call. Their number is 360-668-5700, and they'll send you all the information that you'd like for your project. And let them know that you heard about them through Disability News and Views Radio. Again, thanks again to John and Vanguard ADA Systems for believing in what we're doing and being a part of Disability News and Views. We hopefully are going to take him on the road with us this year, and other people incorporated, of course, a great sponsor of ours. We can't do it without you. And of course, Autistic Services, one of my first sponsors, I think, and someone that's still there with us. I'm so happy. And if you've been a sponsor before and you want to come back, oh, you should. We are offering limited sponsorship opportunities for Taking It to the Streets, so make sure you give me a call, 1-866-369-8058. And this song, by the way, is going to be played in dedication to my friend here, Rick Ritter. Thanks again, Rick, for being on the show today, and thanks again for tuning in to Disability News and Views. Our talk makes a difference, will you?
By the way, could have been.
Thank you for listening to Disability News and Views Radio, a weekly forum for sharing the challenges, opportunities, and inspirational stories of the disabled around the globe. This production is copyrighted, and no part of this production may be rebroadcast or retransmitted in whole or in part without the expressed written consent of the producer. Some of the opinions expressed by guests on Disability News and Views Radio do not necessarily represent those of the producers. Disability News and Views Radio. Our talk makes a difference. Will you? Email your questions, topic ideas, or comments to monica@disabilitynewsradio.com. Advertising inquiries to Disability News and Views Radio are welcomed. Please contact our sales office in the United States at 716-522-9185.
Okay. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Josh Blue, and you're listening to Disability News. Let the revolution continue.
Thank you.